Good morning, everyone. This is Steve from Heartbeats Farm, and this is Reading the Vegetable Notes. So this week, the Vegetable Notes are from February 15th, 2024. It is volume 36, number 2. In this issue, we have crop conditions, pest alerts, lettuce rot disease in winter high tunnels, timing, spring vegetable planting in a changing climate, a new grant and UMass Extension to support cut flower program, news, events, and sponsors. So, crop conditions. February is here, and the days are finally starting to get longer again. The big storm predicted for earlier this week made a sudden move south, leaving western Massachusetts with nothing but a few flakes while dumping several wet inches in the southeast. Here at Heartbeats, we definitely got about 6 inches of heavy wet snow. Whatever the weather, winter work continues harvesting high tunnel greens, distributing storage crops, and folks are busy putting final touches on spring plans, including crop planning and placing seed orders. We are in a workshop and presentation mode at Extension, and we have a full calendar of events for the next few months. Yesterday was the first in our Fundamentals of Organic Production workshop series, and we had a great crash course in fertility management from Sam Glaze, Corcoran, the manager of the UMass Soil Testing Lab. Based on your feedback, we moved most of the events in this series to an online-only webinar format. If you missed yesterday's webinar, there is a link that you can click to see the recording. Hope to see you in 2 weeks on February 28th for the next webinar on cover cropping. Again, there's a link. You can also join us in person on Saturday at the 608th meeting of the New England Vegetable and Berry Growers Association. Another link, it's in Shirley, Massachusetts. Our new weed specialist, Maria Gannett, will present on soil-based weed management techniques in small fruit, and Genevieve Higgins will present on hot water seed treatment for controlling seed-borne pathogens and will give a live demo of the process. For those needing or wanting food safety training, we have two Produce Safety Alliance grower trainings scheduled for next month. One is March 13th in Milford, and one is March 15th in Greenfield. And finally, the recordings of last month's crop insurance webinar are now available. If you're curious about crop insurance, the sign-up deadline is coming up on March 15th, so check out the Crop Insurance 101 and Crop Insurance 301 webinars and how it works. There's links in the veggie notes for those two things. We're excited to announce a new urban agricultural mentor farm program. This is an opportunity for urban farms to tackle their most challenging issues with UMass Extension's new urban agriculture educators. Mentor farms will receive a $2,000 stipend and a $500 in soil testing and/or plant diagnostic services, and will be supported in becoming a source for employees, service providers, and the broader urban farming community. There's a link to the Mentor Farm application. It is open now through Thursday, February 29th, and we encourage you to apply. Okay, so then there is a section on the UMass Extension Vegetable Program Hot Water Treatment Service. Saving your own seed? Consider hot water seed treatment. What is hot water seed treatment? Hot water seed treatment is a process of soaking seeds in hot water of a specific temperature for a specific amount of time in order to kill certain seed-borne fungal, bacterial, and viral pathogens. What seeds can be treated? There are set protocols for many small-seeded vegetable crops, including most brassicas, nightshades, quinopods, including beets, spinach, and chard, allium, and umbels, the carrots, celery, parsley, and cilantro crops. Certain plant pathogens, or sorry, why should I treat my seeds? Certain plant pathogens can affect crop seeds and go on to cause even more severe diseases in the following year's crop. Hot water seed treatment can remove plant pathogens that are within and on the surface of seed, eliminating one potential source of disease on your farm or in your garden. Hot water seed treatment will not protect against pathogens originating from other sources, such as infested crop residues, soil, or windblown spores. If you are saving seed from your own farm or garden and have lots of foliar diseases in your seed crops, it's a good idea to treat your seeds. Or if you routinely struggle with diseases that are primarily seed-borne, treating your seeds is a good first step. UMass Extension can help diagnose crop diseases and advise you on whether or not hot water seed treatment may help. Contact them at umassveg@umass.edu for support. The UMass Hot Water Seed Treatment Service, mail us your seeds, payment, and submission form, and we'll treat the seeds and mail them back. The fee is $6 per ounce per variety, plus shipping, and there is a link in the veggie notes for more details. Pest alerts, winter greens, Cladosporium leaf spot, it's continuing to develop in high tunnels, high tunnel spinach, rendering entire tunnels unmarketable in some cases. This fungal disease causes small tan spots on the leaves, the centers of which eventually develop olive green sporulation. The pathogen can be carried on seed, and once it is established in the crop, the spores can spread via wind. The pathogen thrives in cool weather and high humidity. Till under infected crop residue promptly to encourage breakdown. The pathogen can be eliminated from seed using hot water or bleach, a 1% solution for 10 minutes. Although doing this at a large scale with lots of seed is tricky. There is a link to the Cladosporium leaf spot fact sheet for more information on bleach treatment. For instructions on hot water treatment, see their link of the hot water seed treatment fact sheet, or join us on Saturday to see a live demo at the 608th meeting of the New England Vegetable and Berries Grower Association. We can also hot water treat your seeds for you. We just talked about that. There is reported to be a variation in cultivar susceptibility, but seed producers do not report cultivar resistance. We currently have a Cladosporium resistance trial going on in our research high tunnel, so stay tuned for results this spring. There's Rhizoctonia web blight, was diagnosed on high tunnel bok choy and Napa cabbage last month. Rhizoctonia solania is a fungus that is present in all soils and more commonly causes damping off in seedlings. In certain conditions, it can infect above ground parts of plants and cause water soaked or necrotic spots in a characteristic white fungal mat on the surface of leaves and stems. A fun plant pathology aside, Rhizoctonia is a, basidermicite, the same type of fungus as classic stem and cap mushrooms. All the basidermicites produce spores on microscopic structures called basidia. The gills or spores beneath the mushroom's cap are lined with basidia. Basidia have four tiny spines that each produce a single spore at the tip. When the spores are mature, they shoot off the spines that are carried away by air currents. Rhizoctonia rarely produces basidia in spores, but this sample of web blight had beautiful examples. And there is a picture of the basidian spore of Rhizoctonia. You can see the spines. It's a very, very cool picture. Botrytis crown rot was diagnosed in lettuce last month. This disease, which is fairly common in winter high tunnels, causes lower leaves of lettuce plants to melt away and can progress into the crown of the plant. Infected leaves often develop characteristic fuzzy gray sporulation. See the article in this issue for more details on botrytis and other lettuce rot diseases in winter tunnels. Alternaria leaf spot was found in a high tunnel Claytonia, causing dark brown necrotic spots and smaller reddish leaf spots. There are many species of Alternaria that can cause disease on vegetable crops. Mycelium can survive 1 to 2 years in diseased crop residues and infect plants when conditions are humid and warm. Managing high tunnel humidity by venting and removing row cover on warm days can help avoid foliar diseases like this. Using drip irrigation instead of overhead or overhead irrigating in the morning on sunny days allows leaves to dry quickly, which can help. White mold was found this month in storage carrots in unincorporated brassica residue in the field. White mold has a wide host range and can infect most vegetable crops. It produces sclerotia masses of fungal hyphae surrounded by a hard black rind that allows the fungus to persist in soils for 5 to 8 years. Infected plants develop a soft, watery rot and develop lots of fuzzy white mycelia. Sclerotia can be found within the mycelia The fungus can move to new fields via infested soil and plant material, and also via windborne spores that are produced in infested fields in the spring. The windborne spores can only infect weak or senescent tissue. The biocontrol product Contans can be incorporated into infested soils in the fall to help control white mold. Contans is the fungus Cnotherium minutans, which parasitizes white mold. All right, lettuce rot disease in the winter high tunnels. In winter high tunnels, it is fairly common to see lettuce crops rotting from the base upwards, and in some cases, fully melted heads. This can be caused by several different pathogens that are favored by cool, humid environments of the winter tunnel. Sometimes more than one pathogen can be present at once, and they're unfortunately fairly difficult to control in a winter high tunnel environment. Gray mold, caused by the fungus Botrytis cinerea, is a common pathogen in high tunnels year-round. It loves high humidity in a tunnel. Botrytis produces lots of gray-brown asexual spores on the surface of the infected tissue, giving them a fuzzy appearance. It is a weak pathogen. The spores cannot infect healthy, robust plant tissues initially, but can infect weak or damaged tissues. In high tunnel tomato, Botrytis spores will infect senescent flowers or stems wounded from pruning, where the fungus is able to grow and gain strength before moving in on to infect healthy fruit or stems. In winter lettuce crops, spores can infect senescent or damaged leaves. Leaves that have been frosted or those cut during harvesting and then move into healthy stem and crown of the lettuce plants, causing the whole plant to melt. The leaves need to be wet for the fungus to infect. The fungus survives between plantings on crop residues and the sclerotia, small hard black masses of mycelia that serve as overwintering structures in the soil. Botrytis often occurs along with other diseases, including bottom rot, moving in as a secondary pathogen. Bottom rot is a similar disease to gray mold, but caused by a different fungus, Rhizoctonia solania. This is the same fungus that can cause damping off in seedlings, wire stem and brassicas, and other seedling diseases. Similar to Botrytis, it is not a super strong pathogen, but can take off when plants are somehow weakened, like in the cold, dark winter when lettuce crops are growing slowly. Rhizoctonia survives in the soil as mycelium or sclerotia and infects lettuce leaves that are in contact with the ground. Unlike Botrytis, it does not produce spores on the surface of the infected tissues. Bottom rot is most commonly seen affecting older lettuce plants. Lettuce dropper white mold also looks similar to gray mold and bottom rot. The fungus that causes lettuce drop, Sclerotinia sclerotorium, is a more aggressive pathogen than Botrytis or Rhizoctonia and can infect healthy crops. Its host range includes many vegetables such as tomatoes and beans. It produces Sclerotia that can survive in the soil for many years. It produces notable fluffy white mycelium on infected tissues and pea-sized or larger Sclerotia within the plant tissues. For management recommendations for lettuce drops, there is a linked fact sheet. Management. Till under summer crop residue thoroughly. All these fungi can survive in crop residues that have broad host ranges. Rhizoctonia survive for less time and are less able to infect plants at greater depths. Plant into raised beds with good drainage. All these diseases are favored by wet conditions. Plant healthy, vigorous, but not overgrown transplants. Take measures to reduce leaf wetness. Ventilate your high tunnel when it's warm enough to do so. Avoid using row cover unless it's needed to prevent frost damage. Use drip instead of overhead irrigation and control weeds. Few fungicides are labeled for Rhizoctonia or Botrytis, and there's little efficacy data on their performance against those diseases. If you want to see a list of labeled products, you need to check out the New England Vegetable and Management Guide. Timing spring vegetable planting in a changing climate. This was written by Amelia Ernest. She is a scientist at the Delaware Extension. And this was published March 4th, 2022. So success with spring-planted vegetables depends on getting seeds or transplants into the field at the right time. Timing plantings correctly is getting trickier since the average growing season length for Massachusetts has increased by 11 days since 1895, and the range of increases for New England states ranging from 11 to 27, with most of the increase occurring since 1990. On average, the last spring frost is occurring 3.5 days earlier, and the first fall frost is occurring 7 days later in Massachusetts. Throughout New England, the last spring frost is occurring 2 to 13 days earlier, and the first fall frost is occurring 7 to 13 days later. However, the spring weather conditions in any given year are unpredictable, which can make the season stressful or downright discouraging. Plantings can be damaged by cold weather, or on the other end of the spectrum, unseasonably hot weather can stress cool season crops. Here are some tips to increase your chance of success with spring planted vegetables in a changing climate. Know likely frost freeze-free dates for your site. Frost can begin to form when air temperatures drop close to 32 degrees. A freeze occurs when temperatures reach 32 or lower, and a hard freeze occurs with sustained temperatures of 28 degrees Fahrenheit or lower. Some crops will tolerate a frost or freeze, and some will tolerate a hard freeze, and some will not tolerate either. The likelihood of frost or freeze after a certain date can be eliminated based on past year's temperatures. The likelihood of frost or freeze after a certain date can be estimated based on past year's temperatures. You should also consider conditions that are specific to your location. Urban sites retain more heat, creating a microclimate, termed a heat island, with a longer frost-free period. Areas near large bodies of water or with topography that allows cold air to settle into lower elevation areas will be protected from freezes when temperatures near 32. Conversely, low areas where cold air collects or flat areas where cold air cannot drain will be more at risk of late spring freezes. Knowing how your site deviates from the average for your area will help you decide if you can plant cold-sensitive crops earlier in the season or if you should be more cautious. Even though the average growing season length has increased in Massachusetts, the degree of increase may vary by location in the state. Use historically recommended planting dates as guides. Planting dates are often recommended by seed companies, and growers often have their own set of historic planting dates to start from. These planting dates are based not only on a crop's tolerance of cold weather, but also on their time to maturity and desired harvest window. For example, Brussels sprouts are cold tolerant, but they are transplanted in June for fall harvest because they require a long growing season. To adapt to warmer spring conditions and a longer growing season, choose dates earlier in the planting window for cool season crops, especially those that are prone to quality problems when exposed to heat. For example, lettuce, cauliflower, and broccoli. In many years, warm season crops can be planted earlier in the recommended window to achieve earlier harvest. Variety selection. For cool season crops that might be impacted by unseasonably hot conditions in April, May, and June, choose varieties with heat tolerance. Heat tolerant lettuce varieties will be less prone to bolting and turning bitter tasting. Heat tolerant broccoli and cauliflower are less prone to quality reducing physiological disorders. Another strategy to avoid damage from heat stress is to plant several varieties with different days of maturity. Planting several varieties makes it less likely that all plants will be the heat susceptible growth state during the period of hot weather. A similar approach is to make sequential plantings of the same variety during the entire planting window. Use season extension aids for very early plantings. Many growers use added inputs to modify the environment for seedlings to increase the chance of success with early season plantings. This includes plastic mulch, floating row covers, low tunnels, and rye windbreaks. See the past WCU article by Gordon Johnson. There's a link to that called Transplanting Warm Season Crops in April for a detailed discussion of these practices. Check the forecast before planting. Before deciding on an early planting date, check the weather forecast to determine if predicted conditions will support plant growth. This is especially important if you are planting cold-sensitive crops early. If you are in a freeze-prone site, note any predicted clear nights, which could result in a frost even if temperatures are not forecasted to drop to 32. Try to plant at a time when temperatures are expected to be warm for a few days afterwards. When direct seeding, warm temperature promotes faster germination, resulting in less exposure to insect and disease that impact seeds. Transplanting at the beginning of a warm period allows plants to quickly root into the soil, improving their stress tolerance. Also avoid transplanting right before forecasted strong winds, which can quickly dry out transplants that have not yet rooted into the soil. All right, back to it. Sorry, there's a little break here. I had to set the crew up on bagging some greens. So anyways, here we go, back into it. Acclimate transplants. Make sure that transplants have the best chance of survival by acclimating them to higher light and lower humidity conditions before planting. Transplants should be moved from the greenhouse to an outdoor location in partial sun to protect from excessive wind. Maintain transplants in these conditions for a week before planting to the field. Move or cover transplants if very cold or windy conditions are expected. Be ready to frost protect. Even though some recent spring seasons have been warm, we still have had years with very late frost, such as in 2020. So be prepared to protect sensitive plants if freezing conditions are predicted. Some crops, such as potatoes and sweet corn, will regrow if the plants are still small when frost damaged. Other crops, such as tomatoes, peppers, and melons, will not regrow if plants are frozen. Row covers can be used to protect frost-sensitive vegetables that have already been planted in the field. Covers should be applied in late afternoon before air temperatures fall to retain heat accumulated in the soil. Next section is new grant at UMass Extension to support cut flower programming. In recent years, consumer interest in local cut flowers has boomed. I think they missed an opportunity to say bloomed. The pandemic shuttered traditional florists and disrupted global flower supply chains, forcing consumers to buy local and creating new flower buying habits. Social media has also changed consumers' floral expectations, spurring excitement around unusual or whimsical wildflowers that can only be sourced locally. More and more farmers are growing flowers to meet demand. National membership in the Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers increased nearly threefold from 1996 to 2018, and then nearly doubled again from 2018 to 2022. In 2020 and 2020 alone, official membership in the State Flowers Network rose by more than a third. Anecdotally, we've seen a surge in small-scale cut flower production here in Massachusetts, both vegetable farmers growing flowers on the side and new cut flower farms popping up. However, there are very few resources for cut flowers growers in Massachusetts and New England. Here at UMass, our greenhouse, floricultural, and vegetable extension teams have been getting more cut flower questions. In response to this growing demand, we decided to survey cut flower growers to learn more about their needs. We distributed the survey in December 2021 and January 2022 and found that no single challenge stood out. Instead, cut flower growers wanted help on a range of topics, including pests, diseases, soil health, marketing, finances, and crop planning. There's a link to the results. We're happy to announce that we've received a grant to provide education on a variety of cut flower topics. Specifically, this two-year grant will fund winter webinars, summer on-farm workshops, and new handouts on cut flower topics. They have two webinars on the calendar. On Friday, March 1st, from 2:30 to 3:30, there's a cut flower pest management using IPM. And then on Friday, March 8th, from 2:30 to 3:30, there's pre-production planning for cut flowers. Both workshops are free, though we ask that you register in advance. There's links to registration in the veggie notes. We are excited to increase our support for cut flower growers around the state. We also want to hear from you. If you are a cut flower grower and want to chat with us about your operation and the resources you'd like to see from Extension, email Hannah Whitehead. There's a link to her email address. News. Announcing the new UMass Extension Urban Agriculture Program. UMass Extension is pleased to announce two new Extension Urban Agriculture educators in a new Urban Agriculture Mentor Farm Program. There's an application info below. We're excited to support the state's growing urban farming community. Our Urban Agriculture Extension educators, Ibrahim Ali, joined the team this past October and is based at the Amherst campus. Olivia Golden joined us in December and is based at the Mount Ida campus in Newton. Their roles are to support community-based agricultural projects in urban areas of Massachusetts. Welcome to the team. Urban Agriculture Mentor Farm Program. This program is designed to support urban farmers and foster sustainable agricultural practices on urban farms in Massachusetts. Ibrahim and Olivia will work closely with three different urban farmers/projects each year, providing engagement with Extension staff and helping them tackle their most challenging issues. Mentor farms also receive a $2,000 stipend and $500 in soil testing and/or plant diagnostic services. By taking part in the program, urban farms will not only receive personalized on-farm training and consultation, but we'll assist you to be a mentor to other urban ag projects and farms, sharing newfound knowledge and experiences with employee service providers in the broader urban farm community. There's a link to the application, and the deadline is Thursday, February 29th. This work is funded by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, the USDA, through the Northeast SARE program. There are links to sign up to receive the UMass Extension Urban Ag emails, to apply for the program, and then to visit the website. Next is MDAR is now accepting Resilient Food System Infrastructure Grant applications, known as RFSI. The RFSI will fund projects that expand capacity, aggregation, processing, manufacturing, storing, transporting, wholesaling, and distribution of locally and regionally produced food products, including specialty crops, dairy, grains for human consumption, aquaculture, and other food products, excluding meat and poultry. MDAR plans to award grants to support infrastructure in the middle of the supply chain for domestic food and farm businesses and other eligible entities. MDAR will accept one of two types of proposals from applicants for this grant funding. There's infrastructure grants, so large-scale grants up to $500,000 that will enhance resilience in the middle of the supply chain and strengthen local and regional food systems by creating new revenue streams for producers. And simplified equipment-only grants, equipment-only fixed-price grants between $10,000 and $100,000. To download the RFR, visit the RFSI webpage. There's a link to it. The deadline is Friday, March 29th, and there will be a webinar on Tuesday, March 5th at 12 o'clock with a link to register. Events, so these have pretty much already been mentioned, but the 608th meeting of the New England Vegetable and Berry Growers Association is Saturday the 17th from 9 to 3:15 in Shirley, Mass. They're going to talk about soil-based weed management techniques and small fruit, endangered species programs and the FIFRA, hot water seed treatment, spotted lanternflies, strawberry grower panel, and a cucurbit update. There's an upcoming tree fruit Mass Aggie seminars from Home Orchardist, a link to that stuff. The 2024 Eastern New York Fruit and Vegetable Conference is Wednesday and Thursday, February 21st and 22nd. That is in Albany. We got the farm succession workshops. It is on Tuesday, February 27th at 8:45. This is taking place in New York, Poughkeepsie. There is the New England Vegetable Berry Growers Association and the NEVBGA and the MFGA meeting on labor issues. That is on Wednesday, February 28th at 9 a.m. It's taking place in Fitchburg, Mass. There So the New England Vegetable Berries Grow Association, in conjunction with the Massachusetts Fruit Growers Association, will present an all-day meeting. So you got 10 tips for dealing with difficult customers, employee handbooks, hiring and firing, H2A update. Next is the Fundamentals of Organic Production Workshop series. There's several dates. Usually it's 10 to 11:30. It's online and Zoom, but there's also some in-persons. You got February 14th, which already happened. So next is February 28th, which is cover cropping. March 14th, organic small fruit production. March 27th, organic greenhouse production. April 10th, organic management of vegetable pests. And April 24th, organics and food safety. There's another one on June 25th at Brookfield Farm in Amherst. And there'll be another one on July 9th, to be determined. There's a kickoff spring with two cut flower webinars. They're Friday, March 1st and Friday, March 8th, 2 to 3:30. Already talked about those. We got the UMass Produce Safety Alliance grower trainings. We also talked about those prior. One's in Milford, one's in Greenfield. The 2024 statewide NRCS and Conservation Districts local working group. The meeting is Tuesday, March 19th, 9:30 to 12:00. This meeting is open to all Massachusetts growers. It is an opportunity to provide input to the National Research, National Resources Conservation Services, NRCS, with your local conservation district on natural resource priorities and management strategies specific to your region. Your input will help NRCS and the district shape their programming to better serve all regions of Massachusetts. Agricultural producers, owner-operators of non-industrial private forested lands, professionals representing agriculture and natural resource interests, and individuals representing a variety of disciplines in the soil, water, wetland, plant, forestry, and wildlife sciences are all welcome. There is a link to the county level survey. You should definitely fill that out. There's a link in the veggie notes. There is an ESPCA Preventative Controls for Humane Food Certification training. That's March 19th, 8:30 to Thursday, March 21st to 5:30. $700 training. You got the UMass Extension Second Annual Soil Health Mini School. There's only a few spots left. That is March 21st from 9 to 3:30. It is at UMass Amherst in Amherst. Join for this free full-day event. This workshop is designed to support agricultural service providers, agency professionals, and industry professionals conducting soil-based related work. Farmers, nonprofits, master gardeners, and community leaders are also welcome. Lastly, we got the sponsors page. So you got Certus Biologicals, the New England Vegetable and Berry Growers Association, Rimmel Greenhouse Systems, Johnny Selected Seeds, Farm Credit East, Valent, Harris Seeds, OSCO, CT Greenhouse, Structure and Supplies, Wilson Farm, and Seven Springs Farm Supply, with a link to become a sponsor. So that is the end of the vegetable notes for this week. Again, this set of notes came out on February 15th, 2024. This is volume 36, number 2. And this is Steve from Heartbeats Farm. And I hope you enjoyed listening to the vegetable notes. This is the second one I've done. And I hope to keep it up through the entire season. I don't have an official relationship with UMass Extension for reading this. I'm just kind of doing it on my own for now. So have a great week. Bye.